Welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service, where we report the world, however difficult the issue, however hard to reach. Podcasts from the BBC World Service are supported by advertising.
What does Hezbollah want? Why is Kenya getting involved in Haiti?
What can the world's biggest iceberg tell us?
The inquiry. One big question.
Can we trust Google?
Four expert witnesses.
Time for our second expert witness.
And an answer.
What will be the solution?
Explore the trends, forces and ideas shaping the world with The Inquiry from the BBC World Service. Listen now wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
We all need to have the same level of treatment in Africa as in other countries, as a form of human rights.
We do major surgeries, we do complex operations that are necessary for the patients to live a normal life, to live a long life that they wouldn't live otherwise. So we're really able to give a much, much better quality of life to these children.
Here in Uganda, over half the population is under the age of 18. With a child mortality rate close to 15 times more than, for example, the United Kingdom. There's a drastic shortage of medical care available for children, especially when it comes to pediatric surgery. Uganda needs about 150 pediatric surgeons, and yet, in 2021, there were only four in the entire country. In the same year, a new children's hospital opened its doors in Entebbe, built and run by the Italian NGO Emergency. I'm Lulu Jemima, and for the BBC World Service, I want to find out if this one hospital could change the future of healthcare for my country's children. Before setting off from home in Kampala, I speak with a consultant surgeon at Soroti Regional Referral Hospital, Professor Mary Margaret Ajiko. She spent years trying to address the lack of adequate surgical treatment for children.
A child is not a young adult. A child has anatomical structures which have to be paid a lot of attention when you are giving anesthesia. Like a children have big tongue, they have a short neck, and even maybe the abdomen is protuberance, and then the heads are usually maybe large. So all these have to be taken into consideration when you are dealing with the pediatric surgery. So it is still an area that we really, as a country, need to put more efforts. We need still to train more doctors, pediatric surgeons, pediatric anesthesiologists, and even pediatric nurses. Because pediatric surgery is a forgotten area. It's really a forgotten area. There are many children who need surgery.
Here in Uganda, 20% of children are born with crippling congenital health conditions, from cleft palates to malformations of genitals and bowels, which left untreated cause lifelong suffering and can lead to an early death. Researchers put this down to poor antenatal health care and diet, including lack of folic acid. I've come to the shores of Lake Victoria to see how these challenges are being met by the new hospital. Locals call it Chiwogo. It's unlike any other hospital I've been to. It's surrounded by gardens and water. I was told to leave my soda at the gate as no outside food or drinks are allowed. So I'm watching some parents and kids dancing. I think it's like outdoor exercising. Hands are on their waist, they are marching. It was designed for free by globally famous architect Renzo Piano, who also designed London Shard and the Paris Pompidou Center. Working with Ugandan builders, his team used local materials intended to be both energy efficient and beautiful. The structure cost 23 million euros, which was mostly made by Emergency. The Ugandan government contributed 20% towards this and also provided the land. It's funny, we are being interrupted by sounds of birds, yes, and nature. It's so beautiful.
Yes. Birds are... And me, I'm passionate with birds.
Yeah.
I'm a bird watcher.
Head nurse Julia Pejoni moved to Uganda from Italy with her family when the hospital first opened.
Oh, so this must be perfect. Can you identify?
Paradise.
Can you identify the different species, really?
Yes, yeah? Yes, yes, yes.
Which one is that now?
Ibis.
Ibis?
Yes.
Okay.
She's worked for emergency in Afghanistan, Sudan, and Iraq, so she's familiar with the hospital's ethos. Can you remember your first impression? Do you remember the first day?
Yes, I do remember my first day when I arrived here, because, you know, this hospital and the location and the country itself is absolutely stunning. The hospital from the inside was designed in order it to be as much functional as possible, but the hospital was also designed in a way to be aesthetically beautiful and unique.
Emergency's founder, the late war surgeon Gino Strada, wanted to show governments in Africa how a future with better healthcare is possible. When they built a similar hospital, the Salam Center in Sudan, in 2008, Gino Strada made a point of inviting health ministers from across sub-Saharan Africa to show them how a dream could become a reality. Emergency's president, Rosella Micho, was there to greet them.
They came, they saw the Salam Center, and many of them told us that this was, for them, the big dream, the kind of partnership that they were missing in their own countries to scale up access to high-standard healthcare.
Over time, the idea of a partnership came together, based on the premise of free access to healthcare without discrimination.
And the Ugandans, they were really at the forefront immediately since the very beginning, clearly stating that they had an urgent need in terms of pediatric surgery, but that they were also happy to open the doors of their countries to patients from other countries and staff for other countries. And they were willing to contribute with the land, with financial support, and so on. And this is how everything started.
I kindly ask you, sorry, to disinfect your hands. I can help you. Give me something, yes, please.
I have been to many hospitals in my life, but Emergency is the first hospital where I learned that temperature, air, and humidity have to be controlled to prevent infections from the outside world. 3 years since it opened, the hospital has performed over 3,000 operations. Nurse Julia introduces me to some of the patients and staff. 12-year-old Kenthia is getting physiotherapy. She traveled to the hospital with her mother from Burundi, 700 kilometers away. Kenthia's mother tells me that when her daughter was 7 months old, there was a house fire. Kenthia was sleeping. She got severely burnt on her back and leg. For 3 years, they went to every hospital in Burundi because the older she grew, the more her leg kept contracting from the burnt tissue. Doctors tried to operate on her to straighten the leg, but her condition got worse. Before her surgery here at the hospital, Kenthia could not bend or stretch her leg, and the pain stopped her sleeping. She's here now for physiotherapy and is excited to return to school without her walking stick. Before the surgery, her mother always had to hire a motorcycle to carry her to school, but now she'll be able to move without help. She can finally focus on her schoolwork.
So what are we looking at in there?
In there now we're looking at the ward round. There is now the round ongoing in every department. In the morning, the doctors are assessing together with the nurses all the patients of the department.
Najib is 17. He lives in Jinja town but has been to the hospital several times. Najib needed complex surgery after a bad road accident on a boda boda, which is a motorcycle.
I was from school heading to home, and we were knocked by a taxi, and I fell in front of the taxi, and it passed on me, and then the truck, it was following a taxi, and it again crushed me. I broke all the lower limbs, both tibia and fibula of both limbs, of both legs, and this the shoulder joint dislocated, and the knee joint as well.
Najib was rushed to one hospital after another for many operations and skin grafts. This led to further life-threatening infections. He was finally brought here for treatment in late 2023.
So I stayed here for a couple of months, feeding very well. We are fed very well. We are given shelter for free. We cannot pay for anything.
The nurses tell me that he's always trying to offer to help them with little tasks because he still can't believe that they are treating him for free.
What I can say about this hospital, that I've even never seen such a hospital in Uganda, where you can go without even clothes and you spend there like 4 months when you are eating well, drinking well, which when you are not even paying.
One of the nurses in the outpatient department caring for Najib is Prosi Namaweje. She's been here since the hospital first opened. To get her comfortable for the interview, I asked her why she decided to be a nurse.
When I was young, I got an injury. My sister chopped off my finger with a panga. As you're praying, as you can see, it's not in a very nice shape, but it's there. So when we reached the facility, the doctor seeing the cut off finger was like, let's dispose of this cut off finger. And the nurse was like, doctor, this is a young child. Let us stitch it together. It will function. The doctor was like, no, this can't work. I'm out of here. Do your things. So the nurse was courageous enough, and she was bold, determined. So she fixed, she put back my finger, put some plaster, and she told me, go home, come back in 3 days. After 3 days, I went back. She just changed the dressing. I went back home. So we went through that process until the finger, like, got attached back. When I got that at the age of 9, I started saying, I must be a nurse.
Because of that experience, Prosi is happy to work in a hospital which values the concerns of patients and their parents.
When they come to the hospital here, the first thing they ask, how much are the services here? Then you start explaining, no, services are free, everything is free, we do this and this free for your child. We always get mothers or caretakers who are already stressed and worried of their children's conditions.
This hospital also has a team of social workers. Their job is to build a network of contacts between NGOs, local organizations, and referral hospitals. They also play a big role in making sure the patients and their families are comfortable.
My name is Jane Majale, and I'm a social worker here. We offer counseling services to parents who are frustrated, who are, you know, even struggling mentally. We try to sit with them and try to help them, first of all, understand the condition that the child is going through. Then we try to help them come to a point where they're able to trust the hospital, because many of our parents have been frustrated with some of the local hospitals they've been to. There's been a lot of frustration. Some of them cannot access them. Some of them, they can access them, but then they cannot pay the bills that are required. We try to help parents understand that surgery is not going to solve everything, because in our setting, when someone is told you're going for surgery, we think everything is going to be okay. But we also try to help them understand even the effects that could come after, and help them come to a place where they're not scared, where they're, you know, they're mentally healthy, they're trusting that the doctors will do the best they can.
One of those parents is Florence. Her 3-year-old son Daniel suffers from Hirschsprung's disease, a condition where babies are born without some nerves in their intestines, making it hard to pass stools. Often, a child is born without an anus. Not only do these children need several surgeries, but the treatment involves a colostomy. Colostomy bags are almost impossible to find in Uganda. These children can be constantly soiled. It's humiliating. Daniel had been scheduled for surgery at other hospitals, but Florence was too scared to go through with it.
When they called me for the first surgery, I could not make it. I had a lot of fears. That's what they told me after. They said we could not do the surgery because you had a lot of fears and you collapsed.
Each time, Florence fainted out of fear before she could sign the consent form. And each time, Daniel was discharged without being treated.
So that thing happened like 3 times. Whenever they called me there, I collapsed and the surgery is not done. They told me, now we cannot. You have to calm down and settle your mind.
You said that you still had fear, eh? What were you afraid of?
I thought when my boy is operated, he would die.
Daniel has now had his first operation, as well as the colostomy bag he needed while he heals. Because many hospitals are understaffed, doctors don't always have the time to explain complex surgeries to patients. Here, social workers have to first understand family dynamics.
Patients and families that I've interacted with are usually single mothers or grandmothers who are the ones raising these children. And one of the things that keeps coming up is when the father realized the child was born with the condition, they left. They ran away. The fear and the costs involved in seeking medical care just made him leave.
What does Hezbollah want? Why is Kenya getting involved in Haiti?
What can the world's biggest iceberg tell us?
The Inquiry, One big question.
Can we trust Google?
Four expert witnesses.
Time for our second expert witness.
And an answer.
What will be the solution?
Explore the trends, forces and ideas shaping the world with Inquiry from the BBC World Service. Listen now wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
You're listening to the Children's Hospital of Entebbe on the BBC World Service. I am Lulu Jemima. I'm learning about the problems faced by mothers whose children are born with congenital health conditions. Often a father will abandon the child, leaving the mother to cope alone out of fear of the cost of health care. But there are other reasons why these mothers and children are stigmatized by society, according to medical officer Dr. Ignatius.
There are some patients who come here and they have some ailments, I would say surgical ailments, whereby they were believed that maybe it was witchcraft, something like that. Like, for example, children born with anorectal malformation. In some of our societies, they think that these children, they're like, there is a curse or a spell upon them, which is not true. So most of the time, we labor to explain.
Many of the patients are social outcasts. Nurse Prosi is one of the staff members who has to deal with patients struggling with social stigma.
I can remember this client who came. The baby had a number of deformities. The bladder was out. The legs are not in shape. The intestine is out. And the child was around 1 month. This was the second child for that mother. The first child was okay, the second one. And it was a young mother. It really took us time. First of all, the relatives of the man who came with her never wanted her to be close to the child. They're like, you're the cause of this. For us in our family, we don't produce this. This woman, she has no support. So we had to stand in for her.
By the end of their surgeries, many of the patients walk out as new people. 16-year-old Alan developed breasts when he was a young boy. People in his village would laugh at him. He plays football and the supporters of his opponents would say vile things to him. When he returned to his village, Alan tells me he wore a t-shirt for the first time. Before his surgery, Alan always had to wear thick jumpers to try and hide his breasts. Now he felt smart. He felt like a gentleman. All his life he'd wanted to be like a gentleman. His family is so happy that his sister wrote a song about it. The need for properly trained surgeons to do this kind of complex operation is what brought surgeon Rita Gobe out of retirement in Zurich.
I'm a pediatric urologist, so I work on the kidneys, bladder, ureters, and genitalia.
The conditions Rita Gobe sees are not unique to Uganda. But what is specific to the region is that her patients arrive in their teens rather than as babies, which makes their cases much worse. Alan suffered because he had breasts like a girl. But there are patients who come to the hospital who are stigmatized because they are not clearly either a boy or a girl.
It's called intersex for DSD, and we have a lot of these patients here. And this is really challenging to manage them because they come from very far. It's hard to do a follow-up on them. They come primed because the parents decided this is a boy or this is a girl and it might not be true. And so these are very challenging cases.
Oh, that's interesting. I've never thought about that. So the parent has already decided. What kind of conversations are you having with the parents?
Luckily, we have a very good psychosocial team, so they can talk to the parents. Because to me, I find they don't talk to me.
Rita came out of retirement to teach the young Ugandan surgeons how to operate on these kinds of complex cases. One of these is John Yeager.
It's better to catch these children when they're still young. If you're young and your hormones are not yet there to act on your body, it will not be so different, girl, boy. But at puberty, everything changes. And we have witnessed how these people suffer. Then for plastic surgery, we tend to get anomalies of the neck. We call them cystic hygroma. It causes a lot of morbidity and suffering to especially these young children. So they come in with swellings around the neck. I mean, these swellings disfigure They keep growing. If nothing is done, swelling can outgrow the head, the size of the head.
The Children's Hospital of Entebbe has had a profoundly positive, life-changing impact on all these children and their families. But what does the future hold? For now, the hospital is managed and 80% funded by NGO Emergency. But their ultimate goal is to hand it over entirely to be run by Ugandan staff, trained by international doctors, nurses and administrators, and financed as part of the country's healthcare system. However, it takes 7 million euros a year to run this hospital. A heavy burden for a government under financial pressure and facing rapid population growth, a weak currency, and damaged crops from volatile weather. Uganda's Minister of Health, Dr. Jane Ruth Acheng, is hopeful for the best.
According to the agreement, it was a long-term goal, 10 years of being run by Emergency and then handed over to government. Right now, the costs are being borne by both Emergency and government. Definitely, it will be very costly to keep up, but government is looking at mobilizing resources for health, and one of the areas that government is looking at very seriously is running a national health insurance scheme for all Ugandans so that they can access services, but also looking at alternative funding, and that is co-financing by those who can afford. Right now, as it is, the facility is depending on 80% contribution from Emergency.
President of Emergency, Rosella Mitchell, explains the next steps.
At the moment, we have a 10-year memorandum of understanding.
That's a formal agreement, like a contract.
And 2 years before the expiration, we will have a joint meeting to discuss if the government is ready to take over after 2 years the facility, or if we have to extend this MOU. So there is a mechanism in place, also from the financial point of view, so that by increasing gradually their financial input in the hospital running costs, once we decide that Emergency is not needed anymore, they have already the financial resources. Part of the regular annual budget of the Ministry of Health.
Ensuring that the hospital continues to provide access to healthcare free of charge is a vital part of the agreement between Emergency and the Ugandan government. Can Emergency be sure that this will continue to be the case?
Despite the fact that the Ministries of Health changed over the time, the commitment has always been the same, to try and find a way to make the universal access to healthcare a reality in the country. So this, I think, it's also important.
But will universal access to healthcare be free and fair in the long term? Given Uganda's hardline conservative approach, especially on LGBTQI issues, currently the UN warns that an increasing number of people are being discouraged from seeking vital health services for fear of attacks and punishment. So is a government who has recently signed an anti-homosexuality bill into law truly committed to maintaining the hospital's independence from any political interference or filtering of patient admissions?
Yes, I suppose so, because the model under which we run facilities here in Uganda is that they are independent. They offer services to all without discrimination, and they have been largely free of charge.
The Health Minister, Dr. Jane Ruth Acheng, seems clear about overall policy. Emergency has plenty of experience of keeping the main goal in view while navigating unpredictable politics. But if it came to it in time, would Emergency still hand the hospital to Uganda's authorities if they believed LGBTQI young people or any other stigmatized child could be refused treatment?
It's a process. We cannot be sure 100% that once we will hand it over, it will stay forever as it is. But we can work to make sure to minimize, let's say, the risk that it will be spoiled or dispersed. This is the problem, that wherever you look around, it's very difficult to find governments, and not only in Africa, that are truly and practically respecting all human rights. It's a big challenge. And of course, working in those contexts, these are things that you have to take into consideration. The fact that we have partnerships with the local government for long-term programs does not imply, of course, that we do endorse their policies and their approach and their decisions. But from our point of view, we believe that the non-discrimination in terms of access to our facility is a key point always. So this is where we set the bar. This is something that we made very clear since the very beginning, that the red line is our independence and our neutrality in the way we work.
This open-door policy is why Alan returned home and started recommending emergency hospital to other patients. He says he wishes he did not have to leave. But now that he is better, he has to leave so someone else can also be admitted. I come away from the children's hospital impressed by everything I've seen. But on its own, is it enough to change things for all the children who need surgical treatment in the whole country and elsewhere in the region? Dr. Jane Ruth Acheng and Rosella Mitchell both take the long view.
One of the things that will be required will obviously be an expansion, because right now we have 72 beds. The region is big. And being the only hospital of its kind offering this very high quality specialty requires more beds.
We don't have the aspiration of filling alone the gap. But the idea of these hospitals is really to set up models that can have a broader impact on the system. But we are absolutely aware of the magnitude. It's a drop in the ocean. It's just one seed. But after 30 years, I mean, we have been treated over 13 million people worldwide. It's becoming a thick drop. And then we are planting seeds and who knows which kind of trees can come up from the seeds.
I am very proud of the Pediatric Surgical Hospital. It is a facility that every human being would love to go to, because you have peace and you get the services that you need. And I want to believe that every country would want to have such a facility.
This is a documentary from the BBC World Service with me, Lulu Jemima. The Children's Hospital of Entebbe was made for Bespoken Media by Amanda Hargraves.
What does Hezbollah want? Why is Kenya getting involved in Haiti?
What can the world's biggest iceberg tell us?
The Inquiry. One big question.
Can we trust Google?
Four expert witnesses.
Time for our second expert witness.
And an answer.
What will be the solution?
Explore the trends, forces and ideas shaping the world with Inquiry from the BBC World Service. Listen now wherever you get your BBC podcasts.